Welcome to Nothing Ventured, a podcast exploring some of the lesser heard stories in tech and venture. Join me, Arish Shah, as I speak to founders, investors, and ecosystem operators to bring you insights from the roads less traveled. Hello and welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today, I'm really, really fortunate to have Alex Dunstan, LP at PotentialClimate.vc, NewFinance.vc, which are a climate and a crypto fund, and an instigator at Potential.co, which is providing money and opportunity for the 7 billion of us who don't necessarily have access to it. Alex, it's really great to have you here today. I'm really glad that we were able to speak. How are you going?
I'm really, really good. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I was just thinking about this whilst we were talking before setting up. So we met about 3 years ago for the first time, and you were kind of on a journey of self-discovery even at that stage. And it sounds like you've been going on a bigger journey even now. So I'd be really interested to understand kind of what's happened between then and now and where you're kind of heading.
So, yeah, you met me at three interesting inflection points. So the way I describe it is, as I met you, I was still very much on the hamster wheel in corporate world. I'd been in advertising. I'd done some M&A. I ran Saatchi Invest's investment fund and still look after that a little bit. But very much, you know, the guy running around, getting approval for everything, trying to prove that I was smart, you know, high energy, but just exhausted all the time, like bit of people pleasing, all that stuff. And we met at a time of Linky Brains where it was a weird thing. I wrote a blog post, which was almost like a coming out for me. It's where I worked out I had ADD, and I worked out that I felt stupid and couldn't take people with me. And it was the first time that I really felt I told people who I was. I told the world who I really was. And it turned out there were lots of other really interesting people out there with, let's call it Linky Brains. You know, they just saw the world. They thought, saw, and just did the world differently. And so that was like a high energy, lots of, wow, look at all these interesting people hiding in the corner of Deloitte and in all these places. So that was sort of rah, rah, wee, but coming to a realization. Then we met again, probably about maybe a year and a half later. And that was when I was closing another chapter of my life. This was corporate innovation, Alex. I was founder of a company called The Bakery. And it just wasn't my path, like making corporates happy and getting them to innovate better when they didn't really care about that. And being in a service business or client service business where you got paid for your time wasn't my path. And so that chapter closed and I, you know, got bought out of my bakery position there. And since then, really, what I've been doing is I've been working with our friend, Doug Scott. And really, over the last year and a half, I've done a number of things. We've set up a couple of climate funds. We've started Potential.co that we talked about in the beginning. I was chief of staff at Redbrain, a company that spits off like 40, 50 million of revenue, 3 years old company. And I did that for a little bit. But really, what I feel like I've been doing is just bashing down my own mental prisons and trying to dissolve ego in some way. Not that I really know what that means, but just really not taking on the expectations of others and just really trying to work out who I am. And at the moment, I feel in a very serene place. I feel like I'm doing what I'm meant to do. I'm helping lots of people. And I went through that phase of battling. I was like in that battle between, oh, I should do this because I've got money and security and people love me there. And all everyone ever wants is love, security and happiness. And I was like, I still get a lot of those things from that. But then I was like, but I'm being pulled here. And for a year I was in that battle and that's now just gone. So yeah, I just spend a lot of my time in service to others and it's kind of fun at the moment.
That sounds awesome. I mean, yeah, when we first met, you were sort of partner at Saatchi Invest and kind of heavily embedded in the venture world. And it sounds like you've kind of moved fairly far away from kind of the usual tropes around that, right? Which are, to your point, the kind of always on, always being present, always being, you know, kind of marketing, hustling, you know, looking for that next big thing, looking for the great deal, and often a lot of FOMO as well, which I think can be really quite actually self-destructive over a period of time. It'd be really interesting, I think, to understand kind of why the penny dropped, if you like. I mean, you talked about it in terms of you were kind of tussling with yourself. You were struggling, like, in your own head to kind of separate out what you wanted versus what other people wanted. But what kind of triggered that? Because I think for a lot of people, that often happens when, you know, they're in a kind of corporate role and they suddenly realize they're kind of, they're quote unquote working for the man. You had what I think arguably a lot of people would want, right? Which is autonomy, the ability to kind of work with really incredible people and potentially businesses as well. But you were your own boss, you were doing your own thing. So I'm trying to understand, I think, you know, what triggered that kind of switch in your brain to say, actually, this isn't for me, or I need to move from here to something else.
So like all overnight things, it wasn't overnight at all. Like it started when I was, you know, probably 30. I failed in my job at advertising, got made redundant. I got divorced. It was the first time I'd really failed at anything, and I'd wrapped up my whole identity and achievement at work. And that started some self-reflection, like meditating and writing and, you know, always just exploring. But if there were pivotal moments, there's probably a couple of them. The first is, you know, dad dying makes you realize that time is short. And weirdly, I actually felt quite a sense of freedom from that, which is, even though I hadn't lived with my parents for 20 years, it was amazing how it contributed to me not feeling like my dad was great. But, you know, I'd always like get 30 runs in cricket and be like, you could have got 100. And so weirdly, there was some sense of freedom and release that I could be me, which is kind of an odd thing to say, but equally profound was, it was the first time, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs have this, where, and especially if they had parents who left young or died young or whatever, time is short. And so that was a second realization. The third, as I said before, was I had to reconnect with who I was, not the abstracted cartoon Alex version who could make everyone happy and be high energy and help everyone and, you know, do anything. It was who was I underneath the ego, underneath desiring what everyone else desired? Who was I? Because we all, like, when we're children, we all take on the expectations of others, whether it's school, whether it's parents. And with the resources we have, we find ways to cope. And I was a good chameleon. I was really good at straddling worlds, getting on with everyone. And it served me really well as a kid. But it just stopped serving me because I didn't really know where I was going. I was just reactive to everybody else. And the real thing that I had to do, because I tried lots of little hacks on myself and just playing. And the thing that I had to do was, I was really good in therapy at like cognitively understanding what I was doing, and I could talk forever about this, that, the other. It's fucking meaningless. I had to stop, feel my hands, feel my heart, feel pain. I had to feel. And one thing that I did very deliberately, it was the biggest thing that I did. So this would be the final thing that I did. For a period of 3 months, if not six, I said, I'm going to turn off my brain. I'm going to clear my diary. And I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing at any one time. And what that did was I reconnected to whatever you call it, your inner self, the art inside you, the thing inside you, me, not the constructed version of me that made everyone like me, but me. And I did loads of things. I did podcasts with magicians. This random woman called Healing Elaine popped up that I chatted for 6 hours to. A random person came on and said, you're on a mission, I'll be your life coach. Like, lots of interesting things happened when I just turned off my brain and did whatever I felt most like doing at the time. And, you know, obviously working close with someone like Doug as well, who really helps you go down the matrix and look at the world with different eyes, was another big part of it. And that was it. Here we are.
So for our listeners, just to explain, Doug Scott is, I think he describes himself as a recovering angel or a recovered angel investor, but he founded Red Brain, which Alex mentioned earlier on. He's, to your point, he's very good at going down rabbit holes. I think Doug was probably the person who switched me on to where COVID could go way back in sort of February last year. And that was when I first started really thinking about kind of how potentially bad actually things could get if they continued in the vein that they were. I mean, what you've described to me is really interesting because as someone who's, you know, so I've been part of structures like family businesses. I come from obviously a South Asian family. A lot of the things you described are very, very kind of particular to these sort of families where you are constantly holding yourself up against other people rather than necessarily to yourself. And actually, one of the biggest things in my life, I think, that happened was when I left my family business back in 2015 and actually decided to do stuff for myself. There was a huge kind of weight lifted off, even though I battled against it for quite a while because I just didn't know, you know, change is hard, right? Change is very difficult. Like, what were the techniques that you used to explore what was meaningful to, you know, you talked about therapy, you talked about switching off and doing stuff, I think, but it's very easy in today's world to try and do that, but then kind of get distracted by everything else that's going on. It sounds like you had to be quite intentional about what you were doing. Can you talk me through kind of how you did that? Because I think a lot of people, and certainly founders, get so wrapped up in the business and they get so emotionally tied to the business. And, you know, if they've pissed off a customer or if they've got an investor that's not satisfied, or if, you know, these are all problems that even if you don't go through a wholesale change, these are small changes on a daily basis that can be really helpful. What were the things that you did to really help you take that journey, I guess?
So the first thing is, the foundational thing is, you need to be open and curious. Because if you're not open and curious, you ain't going to do anything. So, you know, one advantage of having an ADD brain is everything's a shiny new object to explore. So imagine me just going, oh, wow, synapse is connecting, going, I'll try that, right? So I mentioned some things there, but I'll mention some other things that I did along the way. There's a book called David Hawkins, which is called Letting Go. And what I did there was I used to sit in my room at night, and I used to bring back painful memories of trauma. And when I say trauma, it's like, I realized one thing, like my dad took a train set back when I was 7, right? Something I'd totally forgotten. And because he took that back as a Christmas present, because I was naughty, I don't even remember what I did. I was like, probably he doesn't love me or something. Because that, I felt that in my heart, right? And that was something that I needed to let go of. So you literally just sit there, you feel the pain, and you let it go. It's a really simple technique. But I think that helped. I also did a thing where I tried to lucid dream. So I tried to set an intention before bed and go, try and bring up traumatic memories that I have forgotten that I need to let go. So I did that. And that sort of helped. I did lots of different meditation techniques. I tried some of them. I did all sorts of things. I literally went, oh, that sounds interesting. Let me try that. You know, everything from, you know, running in the morning to clear my head to 3-minute cold showers in the morning and at night. They're all like just different ways to become more self-aware, I guess. So, you know, I could probably go on forever with all the little tiny things that I did, but it was I wish I could say it was a structured plan, but it was in a good way, I think, just feeling where I was going.
Yeah, sometimes structure is the enemy of progress, right? So I completely buy into trying the things that seem to work and seeing what actually works for yourself. I mean, moving along, because you talked about being open and curious, like one of the things you've been very open and curious about quite vocally recently is crypto. I'd love to kind of get a bit of an understanding from you around why you went down that rabbit hole. And, you know, I know there's a lot of time, energy and breath been expelled on discussing the pros and cons of crypto and Bitcoin and so on. But it'd be great to understand from your perspective, why did you go down that rabbit hole and kind of where did you get to?
The short answer is I had time. Like one of the things I really care about is I think most people are stuck in like a trauma loop. Paycheck to paycheck, like never getting out of the cycle. And one of the things I'm really passionate about is how do you get people to time freedom? And the way I define that is either actual economic time freedom, where they can get up every day and choose what they do economically, But I also think as time freedom as taking control of your own mind, which is partly like the sort of media that you kind of let into your life. And also when doing what you're meant to do and encoded for in life, that feeling of flow when you do it even if you weren't paid, how do you get more people doing the thing that they're encoded to do, which again is often about breaking mental prison. So anyway, the short answer is working where I worked suddenly gave me time to properly look at Bitcoin, because I first got into crypto in 2017, got some Bitcoin and Ethereum, knew nothing apart from the meme, like surface level stuff, like just parroting the same memes of everyone else. But it came to COVID in March 2020. And obviously the world looked like it was going to explode. And I was like, the one question I have to answer now is what happens in great financial crises, in depressions? What can I learn from history? And I read stuff on Ray Dalio. And I actually learned what is money. And I actually think to get into Bitcoin, you really have to ask yourself and know, understand what is money. Otherwise, you can see why developers sit there going, it doesn't do anything. Like, you can't build stuff off it. Like, what is it? Don't get it. And I can get that if you don't understand money. But because I had time, I really understood money. And I just went down a huge rabbit hole. I just absorbed everything for 9 months that I could on the subject. I'm still a massive believer in it. But and actually, I became a bit of a Bitcoin maximalist because I was reading a lot from Bitcoiners, and you can't help but be influenced by them going, look at all those shit coins. But since then, I've regained my critical thinking faculty. And I also believe that everything being built off Ethereum is very exciting. Brackets, choose your other first layer chain if you're interested in it. I think there's more risk to it. I think there's tech risk. I think there's regulation risk. But both are super interesting and represent hope for a new generation who feel let down by their parents. Like if I'm a millennial now, so this is just from an investment point. We're not talking about fixing the world at the moment, but just from an investment standpoint. If you're a millennial or a Gen Z now, you're like, I can't imagine what it's like to sit there just looking at asset prices and just go, you fucked me. What is this? Stop manipulating the money supply. Stop putting the hand into asset owners. Stop opting me out of the economy. Fuck you. Don't tell me what to do. I'm going to ape into GameStop and crypto and ETH. I'm going to make loads of money because you've cut me out of the rest of the system. And anyway, I'm on a slight tangent there. But yeah, that was my story of how I got into it. I had time and it's amazing. You can become quite expert on something. I'd say I'm 80% expert, which is all I'm ever going to be. And you can just do that with time.
Yeah, I mean, I think time has been the one thing over the course of the last year that I think most people have realized how valuable it is, as well as realized that they had more of it than they necessarily thought they did, even if that was just the 2 hours commute that they've now gained back for a lot of people, as an example, right? One of the things you just said there...
Unless they had kids and they were homeschooling them.
Unless they had kids and they were homeschooling them. And I know a lot of people who have struggled through that. No doubt you were one of them. But you talked there about fixing the world. And that's actually a really interesting thread to explore because, you know, both potentialclimate.vc and newfinance.vc, so, you know, climate fund as well as a crypto fund, obviously are trying to go down that path. But you've moved out of the kind of the GP role into the LP role, right? So you've gone from managing the fund to investing in the fund. What's driven that? And clearly, these are big, you know, purple sky, red sea situations and opportunities. Like in your wildest dreams, where do you hope this kind of goes?
Okay, this goes into what is potential.co. So basically, this is the Doug Scott and Alex Dunstan and others in the potential team point of view on the world. There's a lot of people in the moment in the world with a low level hum of anxiety. And loads of people don't seem very happy, despite the fact we have the best living conditions on any rational basis than we've ever had. And if you look at some of the problems in the world, we go, money has become an obsessive measuring stick over everything else. So it's shareholder value over everything. We seem to have forgotten how to connect and have community. We don't seem to have very good role models or leaders. You know, we worship at the feet of Andreessen and Musk. And the question is, how do you do impact and how do you create the conscious leaders of the world? Because this isn't, our problems are generational. You're not going to fix them in 5 minutes. So we're like, how do you create a better society? And fundamentally, it really comes down to individuals and more conscious leaders. The leaders of our world have to actually care about shit, not just tick a box on ESG, not just do stuff to pretend that they're doing good, virtue signaling to the world they're doing good. So what are we doing? We've got a vision that we want to invest, help and create the next generation of conscious leaders. And how we do that is in 30 years, we want to get 1,000 of these people. And we want to help them find their right seat. Because if you get people in the right seat, and if you really help them down the Russian dolls of consciousness, then they can be very powerful and influential in society in ways they've got no idea they can be. But that only really comes when you're doing the thing you're encoded for and you become conscious. And so that's the game, but we've got a long time to do it. And to give you some examples of what we do, we take a guy called Pete. Pete was a CTO, he was a consultant, obsessed by climate change, never been an investor. Would love to be a climate investor. We go, great, you can be an investor. We'll cornerstone your first fund. We'll give you help with the potential team to do all sorts, get the brand, growth hack, whatever. And we'll help you get to hundreds of millions of quid, and you will be one of the great influential leaders of the world in 30 years because you've got no idea how far you can go yet, which most people don't. We've got a guy called Mike Kelly, who started a new finance crypto fund. You know, these are both causes we care about, decentralized systems and climate. And we're trying to find and help the people who've never done this stuff before and who really care about the thing that they're doing that will have impact in the world. And we've got a model of the world. We think of all the nodes in the network that they will create if they do good in the world. So it's like, if you can help these guys create time freedom, what good will they do in the world when they've got all the resources? So that's one bit. So start fund managers. We've got a bit which is just normal angel checks into interesting companies that do good in the world. James Routledge at Sanctus was one. Jim Mann at Future Forest Company is another. And then the other bit is just like a constant filter of people who we don't know where they'll end up or what they'll do. And we've tried various experiments, which is pay them for 6 months to explore. It really confuses them. They're like, what do I need to do? We don't know. Just play and explore. We've got another where we give random 10K checks to people like kids on council estates and see where they end up. But you're always trying to lift people up in society and get them closer to the seat they're meant to be in, where I guess it's founder product market fit would be another way to describe it, the thing they're meant to do. And it's really amazing where if you can take people off the hamster wheel and to get them to think and play actually is another important thing. Where can people end up when you give them the chance to play without expectation? And yeah, we've got Emma, Shaz and Will who've done that and they're now helping us in the potential team. We've got a guy called Kieran and Nassos who are just playing at the moment and seeing where they end up. We've got Mike at Dexcender, you know. We've got a guy called Lee Parry who started a business called PPE and now is looking at crypto trading system. And if we get this right, we're on a journey with all of them for 30 years and we're like, where could they be? And there'll be more of them. There'll be another 990 of them in the next 30 years. And even if each of them only have a community of 50 people influence, and those 50 people influence another 20 people, that's 1 million people. That's a society. It's an island. So that's it. Do you like that?
Well, it's exponential. Well, you know I like that. like this talks to so many levels of issues that I think you and I have discussed in the past as well. Like one of the fundamental things that was both amazing, but the blocker at Linky Brains when you guys were kind of trying to seed that and see where that would go. And you weren't seeding out of capital at the time, but just with thoughts. One of the biggest problems was that people kind of remain locked inside their own heads. Even if you give them freedom, they want to remain kind of slightly trapped, or they want to be told what to do and how to do it and where to do it. And part of that obviously is maybe not having the financial freedom to be able to say, well, actually, screw it. You know, I'm just going to go and and do this, which is maybe what you've unlocked here. But part of that's also because, you know, we're used to having this hierarchical system, whether that's going through school and having the expectations of, you know, I don't know, you do school, you potentially go to university, you then get a job, you know, et cetera, et cetera. These are all constructs that I think are all falling away and have fallen away rapidly over the last 24 months, especially, or certainly the last 18 months. I mean, I think it's very exciting to be able to do that or to be able to be part of that. And I think, you know, you talked about it's right people in the right seat. And one of the questions I think, you know, philosophers have asked over time is, you know, how many Mozarts, you know, were missed because they never had access to a piano, right? How many, you know, how many Van Goghs never picked up a paintbrush? And I think one of the incredible things about what's going on right now with NFTs, as an example, within the crypto space, is exactly that. You're now seeing this kind of explosion of creators, or modern day creators, being able to participate in a way that they haven't been able to participate for many years because they've been locked out of the system. So do I think that's exciting? Yeah, I think it's pretty bloody exciting. I think that's great. So, I mean, what you basically described there is also helping people to almost take the journey that you've taken, right? It's that whole self-actualization kind of journey. How do you get outside of yourself? How do you start thinking about what you would do if you had no boundaries, which I think is a really, really interesting way to help people along that journey. One of the things I wanted to ask as well was, like, this is very different from pure venture, right? And one of the things that I've been slightly vocal about, and I keep getting smacked down on this, is, you know, I'm very enthusiastic about what technology can do for the world. I'm less enthusiastic about what we're actually doing with it, right? And one of the things we seem to be doing with it at the moment is, you know, shipping some consumer product to a consumer much quicker, right? So, you know, 10-minute delivery, whatever. I get it. There's a market and, you know, there's probably money to be made, but it doesn't seem to be necessarily transformational. It sounds like you've also made a kind of big shift from the sort of thinking you would have probably had whilst you were with Saatchi, or Saatchi Invest rather, as an investor, kind of pre-seed, seed levels, to what you're doing now. Because this is less driven by hard metrics, I think probably more driven by the potential, right? So again, was that a switch that occurred as you kind of grew along your path? Or was it, again, was it the trigger, or was it, you know, causation, correlation, I guess?
Well, I think the bit that I didn't describe as well is we're looking for people at the edges. So this is people who think, see and do different, because, and this is the, you know, linear institutions don't work that well for non-linear people. And so the reason that's important is because I think there's two ways we win with this model. Number one is, if you look at, say, our portfolios, like, investing in the stuff that looks mad is a winning bet. Like, if you take, say, Doug's Angel portfolio, I think it's like 9x up. And that's just based on, and he took silly, like, bets that other venture people just would not take. They just seemed ridiculous. But, you know, it's that thing about, you have to be contrarian. You can't get returns by being in mass consensus. And that's very true. So I think this strategy works from an investment point of view, but it also works from, it's a win-win. Because where do we end up with zero economic return? Well, we're spending all our time with people we want to spend time with. One of my rules since I turned 40 is spend zero time with people I don't want to spend time with. Because life is just a journey with the people you're on the journey with. So you win in that way. You win because you get more people in their seats. You win because they're really grateful for it. And you win because you go, where can they get to bring on, do the next generation of good in the world? So the way we see it is, it's win-win-win. Now, does this mean that these people will take venture capital? They may, but they'll probably do it at a time where they're good and ready. I think where we look at it is, we'll invest in people. Sometimes we won't know what the economic model is. We invest in the person and don't know what the economic model would be and don't expect it to deliver a 3x return in 10 years. And hence, we're more patient. We have more flexibility on what we invest in. And as people in venture know all the time, things come up that don't look like venture deals and end up having ridiculous returns. And so I think if you look at the incentives of it, the real difference is 30-year timeframe. Fit the we invest in the person, not the economic model. And we don't just start with the economic model and fit them to that. And we really care about where they'll end up and whether they'll do good by only doing impact and really, I guess, picking people who are capable of becoming those leaders. So those were probably, if you look at incentive design and obviously also backing just people at the edges, those are the four things that I think really make it actually unique versus we invest in ambitious founders who want to change the world. Stick a logo every ever investor's site. All say exactly the same thing because the incentive's the same. And if you don't change the incentive, you don't change anything.
I think that's very provocative, right? So both obviously the longer term time frame. So you're not focused on, okay, how do I exit in 7 years or whatever, you know, to your point, what do the economics look like for me to be able to exit in 7 years? And to your point, again, backing founders who aren't even founders maybe right now.
We win either way.
Yeah.
They're so grateful. And it's lovely to be in a world where people are grateful and interested and want to learn and who are giving and who want to be part of a community and who are missionaries and who don't have to. So many founders end up as a shadow of themselves because they start on this wondrous game going, I'm going to do this. And they end up going, I've just become a pawn in this system. And how did I become a cog in this machine? And how did I lose my ability to be a self-sovereign individual? And who am I? Who the fuck am I? And whose game am I playing? And why is everything about mimetic desire? And why am I wanting the things that everybody else wants without even realizing? And all of this comes back to being self-sovereign individuals. You take back control of your mind and your being and who you really are.
I think that's actually probably a really poignant place to sort of start winding it up, because it kind of takes us full circle back to the journey that you've been over the last 3 years. I'd love to understand from you, you know, if you could pick three things that you would tell our listeners they should focus on or maybe even stop focusing on, what would those be for you? Like, knowing everything that you know now, what would you have done differently 10, 15, 20 years ago maybe?
Have a think about this question. Who are you really? If you think about your life and you think back to your childhood, when did you start taking on the expectations of others? And who were you before you did that? Who was the little girl or boy in the playground? What were you doing? Were you making people laugh? What was the thing that you turned off in yourself because you did what you needed to do to survive at the time? And that little soldier in your head that gave you this coping mechanism, whether it be, I'll prove I'm really smart, or I will project this in the world, I'll make people really like me, I'll achieve it. When you work out what that is, and you work out how much it's serving you now, you can then start really finding your true self. And at that point, you'll start on the hero's journey. You'll explore. You might go into the belly of the beast for a bit, but then you'll come out the other side with clarity and wisdom and joy and purpose, because it will be in total alignment with what is in you. Because everyone is unique and has a contribution to make to the world. And weirdly, it's just about getting out of your own way.
Awesome. And it sounds like to me that for the time being, at the very least, you know, Alex Dunstan has found Alex Dunstan, and long may you be yourself, Alex, I think is probably what I would say.
Yeah. And just as a caveat, it's never done. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm sat here on a Zen mountain with all the knowledge, but it's, you know, maybe we'll speak, you know, hopefully we'll speak before that, but you know, we'll see where I'm at the next sort of inflection point of the journey.
Yeah, I mean, they're all steps, right, along the path. But, you know, I think the point is to be on the path. And then from there, you can see where you're going. I think this was an incredible conversation, Alex. I thank you so much for your time and for your energy, as always. Where can our listeners best find you? Is that LinkedIn, Twitter? Where do you hang out?
Yeah, LinkedIn and Twitter. So at Alex Dunstan on those two platforms, and potential.co and climate.vc. and newfinance.vc, and a little bit of Saatchi Investor.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I really hope we do get a chance to talk again.
Legend. Thank you so much, Arish.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Nothing Ventured, an Emerge One production. As always, we'd love to get your feedback on our conversations, your thoughts, as well as topics or guests you'd love to hear from. Drop us a line on social media or via one of the links in the show notes. But for now, be well, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of Nothing Ventured. I mean, what have you got to lose, right?